Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? It's that time again. We're doing it once more. I'm Eric Payne, K's son. This is K's son and friends, Citizen Payne, Eric Payne. I'm a Payne. Yes, I am, and I claim it loud, proud, and clear. That's Chuck D and the fellas with the remix of Welcome to the Terror Dome because, well, we are in the Terror Dome, ladies and gentlemen. But there might be a little light, a little sunlight shining through. It looks like the sunlight shining through is my man Joe. Mr. Joe Biden, president-elect. I'm just going to go ahead and call him president, give him his title. He's president of the United States, and maybe that makes some heads explode. There's one big orange head that I'm hoping it makes explode, which I'm sure it already has. If you see some pictures when the wind is blowing and it catches that dude's hair. But so what are we talking about? This is a week after the election. Republicans want to challenge it. Republicans, Trump and his Republicans want to challenge it because they have enabled him. And it ain't working out. It ain't working out for a man because you know what? He's a loser. He's a loser. And I don't mean everybody to be so partisan, but I got to be, right? Because this racist was elected to the White House with clearly now 70-some-odd million people who believe in him, believe in his policies and principles, but I can't be mad at them because they're a product of America. They're a product of this racist society that has changed and lied about who they really are. So I can't be mad at these people that are descendants of the people that, you know, went to lynchings, hung people, murdered people, made people slaves, and then turned around and called them lazy, murdered off the indigenous people of the land. I can't be mad at these individuals because that's what they learned. That's what they learned at the knee of the people that brought them up. You heard me say it before on this show that many of those people that would show up at these rallies, not really caring about the spreading of the disease, right? Many of these people that would show up and yell and say, lock them up, and cheer this guy on as he was talking about all of these despicable stuff, you know, even when he was running for election, when he talked about what he would like to do with people that disrupted his rallies, which you've heard me say before, I don't really believe in going to people's rallies and disrupting them. But to hear these people talk about lock them up and do this, and this jackass Steve Bannon making the comment about Dr. Fauci should be beheaded on his little podcast or radio show. You know, guys like that are usually the ones that just try to stir people up. They don't ever get their hands dirty. All the trash they talk, it's just talking trash and bullies. And if you're about my age and you're African American, you probably have come across, even younger, I'm sure, and older, you probably have come across those type of individuals who talked a lot. And they only talked that trash when they had you outnumbered or were bigger than you or whatever. And then you might have grown a little bit bigger a few years later, and you see those same people, and they got a different tune they're singing. But you know, some all these threats and all this intimidation, to many of us, it ain't nothing new. That's why it didn't move us. That's why it didn't shake us. It ain't nothing new when we're prepared for that. And now we got this clown who refuses to accept defeat. And as he goes every single day trying to make it harder and harder for you know, Joe Biden to come in, the new administration to come in and do the necessary things that need to be done in a transition. Doesn't care about the American people, never did. Never did, and that's where the racists and the wealthy ones in particular use the masses. All those people out there at those rallies would be coming and packing in and don't care about spreading the virus, then go home and get sick. They are using them. And like I always said, and like we always say, is that the one thing that was sold to them throughout these 400-plus years that we've been in bondage in this country was that, well, you're still a white man in America. And so that was good enough for them, even though they might have been poor, even though that the higher-ups or the people with money might have been using them, might have been treating them the same way that they talked, the same way as they treated those very slaves that they would tell them that they were better than. But, you know, some people need to feel that they're better than other people, especially if your life is not really going that great. You need to, and you're not really able to change it. You need to feel better about something, right? So there's black people. They can feel better about that because black people are beneath them. And the system that was built in this country was made so it would make it very difficult for us to achieve freedom and parity, even though many of us built this country, died to defend this country, went to wars for this country. I never knew my grandmother's brother because he died in the war way back, Korea or World War II or whatever. I don't know which. I forget. Or my Uncle John, who, when he saw Saving Private Ryan, you know, he was in that war. And he was talking about it. He would, you know, talk to my uncle, who was a congressman at the time, about getting the recognition for the black soldiers back in those days because, you know, the white dudes were always the ones getting the shine, right? Got to expect that. This is America. Or the brothers who would get disrespected wearing their uniform. We talked about Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was basically one of those reasons. And there is a movie about called The 24, and I think it took place in Texas, where some black soldiers rebelled against the racism they were receiving. I think it's on Amazon or Hulu. You should check it out. And so when I think about this country, you know, it really kind of gets to me. It really doesn't seem to be all it claims to be. The PR, the propaganda that these people spread about themselves and about their culture is nothing but lies. I mean, I've said it before, if they lied about Jesus, everything else is up for grabs. And so times when I wanted to say to hell with America and all this, but I still believe in it because my people died to build this country. My parents didn't die, my mom obviously passed, but they worked in a country that treated them less than. My mother told me stories about being a little girl and going into grade school, and where when it came time for them to have this little part of the classroom where they would do a ballroom dance, she didn't have a partner if the other ethnic, who happened to be a Portuguese or Italian descent, if the other ethnic wasn't there, she would have to do her dance with a broomstick because, you know, you couldn't touch the white people. That boils my blood to think that my parents, people I love, were treated that way. And these idiots, these savages, try to exalt themselves as if they are gods when we know that we are the original image of God. I'm talking some serious black power stuff. You got to forgive me, everybody, because it pisses me off that this jackass is in the White House putting people's lives on the line. He's already responsible. I'm going to bring Byron in because he always likes to talk about how responsible this idiot is for all these lives that have lost. And they're talking about because he is not allowing the transition to go through and a lot of his people that are working for him are not dealing or working closely with the Biden team, that it could potentially result in the deaths of more Americans. And this idiot has been in his hole all week because he hasn't wanted to come out because, he doesn't like losing. It's really hard for him to lose. Well, my question is, haven't you been paying people to make you look like a winner all your life? Yeah, it seems to me he's been a loser his whole life, just a rich loser who was able to pay people to do his homework, who was able to pay people so he didn't have to get drafted. So the facade of being a winner is just that, fake news, a facade. I'm gonna bring my brother Byron in here because I'm getting a little heated. I know he's heated already, but let's cool it off. What's up, Byron, the legendary historian, Byron Song?
Well,
my brother
Eric Citizen Payne. That's a good name, my brother, for using that moniker, because ultimately it comes back to what does that word citizen really mean? And we are, and just put this into perspective. Today, over 152,000 people infected with COVID-19. Yesterday, over 144,000 people infected with COVID-19. In 2 days, and since the election, not counting yesterday and today, because today is the 12th, counting yesterday, since the election, over 748,623 people were infected. Consider that damning. Mm-hmm. And we get crickets from those sycophants who continue to run game for this MF, mother's finest. Okay, and so I'm going to hold my tongue, my brother, because I'm like you, and I am reminded that in this week, November the 10th, back in 1898, you know what happened on that date, my good brother? That was the Wilmington, North Carolina insurrection, where white supremacists drove from power all of the black and white elected officials of this predominantly African-American city. Now, remember that Wilmington, North Carolina, after the Civil War, was predominantly an African-American city, very much like Tulsa, Oklahoma. And when we say they white racism, because then this reflects upon what we're looking at today on this weekend in D.C., without a permit, we have these proud white boys, whatever their group name is, coming into the city. Now, what are they doing, and why would they even be allowed to walk into this city? We have a strict gun law in Washington, D.C. So if you're going to talk about law and order, rule of law, the first mother's finest MF that walks across that bridge with a gun, I want to see some arrests. I don't even want to hear about one of the things that they're asking us to do is to forgive them. I am not in the mood of forgiveness. I'm not turning the other cheek.
The Proud Boys?
These 70 million people who voted for this class act, that asshole. Mm-hmm. I'm not forgiving. I'm not forgiving. I'm not forgetting. And history makes me want to remind my people and those good people who consider themselves to be citizens of this country that on November the 10th, 1898, the insurrection of Wilmington, North Carolina, during the insurrection, hundreds of African Americans were forced to flee the city, many of whom never returned, and the press for the state's only black-owned newspaper, the Wilmington Daily Record, edited by a real hero brother, Alexander Manley. Because you don't know that name? Because they don't teach this in your school. Alexander Manley, his office was burned to the ground, and then they had the audacity, these white insurrectionists had the audacity to stand in front of that burnt-out building and have a photographic memory. It's in the books, people, and you need to see the documentary because it is documented. Documented. Mm-hmm. It's not fiction. We're talking about systemic racism. And then I had an epiphany, which I sometimes call an apostrophe, this morning. When you go into the military back in the 40s and the 50s, you know, one of the things that the Army was very proud to put on their moniker, creating men as one mean, green, killing machine. And you think about this. Over the last 40 years, those mean, green, killing machine soldiers, men, women, of all colors have been killing who? People of color. So that when these militia guys are coming back, strutting the streets with their guns and rifles, very much in reminding 1898, these same kind of insurrectionists calling themselves proud U.S. citizens, who are they looking to kill when they get back to the United States? Once they come back from Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Somalia, who are they coming back and looking to kill because they've been killing brown people?
Mm-hmm.
It's not an accident, people.
That's right.
And you can't turn that switch off. And ultimately, these same yahoos who consider themselves to be citizens who fought alongside these same brothers and sisters overseas, now they come back and now they want to reclaim their superiority over the people of color. And the first thing these yahoos do when they get in a police force, their first look of to persons they look for to continue their superiority is to rough up or kill a black man or woman.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know how this systemic racism is enhanced and continued? Because they're mean, green, killing machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's America.
That's right.
That's where we are.
That's right. Let's bring in Wayne here, legendary newsman, and he's got interesting perspectives. Wayne, how you doing this evening?
I guess, sir, Ryan, I just wish I could do something with my Verizon service, but I guess it takes seven times before it's a charm. But, this is almost like Trump trying to leave the White House, but not a trying at all. But just piggybacking on what Byron said, man, what baffles me is that you have those sick individuals that have somehow found a way to infiltrate various law enforcement agencies, and it's documented. I mean, black folk, Latin folk came out in great numbers to put Biden over the top.
Yes.
But yet, there's still a segment. I was reading a piece that was in The Hill this week by Juan Williams, citing how 12% of black men voted for Trump, 39% Latino men supported this guy, and I don't get it. I mean, it just, what is it that and I know that there is some failure on the part of the Democratic Party not to make an effort to reach out to these individuals. And some people you can't change, but 12%, you know, and the 39% was the stuff that we talked about weeks ago where, the Trump campaign was putting out all sorts of false advertising in Florida. And they were able to change the minds of some who felt that, you know, Biden is a dictator, socialist, that kind of thing. But we have a lot of work to do, and I'm hoping that Kamala Harris's rise to be vice president, and who knows what happens 4 years from now, will correct some of the deficiencies in law enforcement across the country, that will have programs aimed at basically extracting or just dismissing people who have behavioral problems, that it's just not swept under the rug until something monumental happens. You know, it's like, and I hate to cite the Catholic Church, but, you know, it's the problem that the church, and maybe this is a poor analogy here, with pedophilia on the part of some, you know, priest, and those who want to embrace the doctrines of Catholicism and have to tolerate this kind of nonsense. You know, I'm trying to, you know, basically my point here is that there's work to be done, you know, and it just bothers me that we still have these issues in our own community, and Joe Biden, you know, said that he has our back. You know, I'm hoping that this administration will welcome a change. He's got a lot on his plate.
Well, you know what, Wayne, one of the things to remember, because you asked a very significant question, we need to tackle the issue of the 12% that voted for the orange clown. And here's the, here's the rationale, and to understand the systemic part of racism and the plantation concept. The why did we have the notion of field versus house? Now, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Field Negroes versus house Negroes. Now, why were the house Negroes brought into the house in the first place? And not no disrespect to Quentin Tarantino and Sam Jackson, but who? When will our filmmakers really tell the story about that? Or the paper bag test. You know what I'm saying? Because let's face it, Morehouse is the house. Spelman, house for the slave girls. Okay, they came out of the field. This is history, people. And so when you see the 12%, then you understand why Malcolm can say in the ballots or the bullets, and he talks about it. I mean, that's no accident when he says, "Well, when the master is sick, is we sick, master?"
Yeah.
Come on,
right?
It's documented, and that's that's the systemic part of racism that this country, like an ostrich, buries its head in, because historically, that's how they created that. We didn't create that.
Let me pause you for a minute, Byron, and let me bring in somebody who can speak to the or about the election, at least 12%. I'm going to bring in Congressman Don Payne Jr. Full disclosure, everybody knows that he, by now, if you listen to the show, that he's my cousin, but he's also has been reelected to office with probably upwards of 85% of the vote. And he's joining us again to speak about the election. And Chop, you heard Don, you heard about the 12% that voted for Trump. What's why don't you jump in and give your perspective about that?
Well, thank you for having me. And sometimes how you feel like you walked into a buzzsaw, getting on this call. I don't know. I don't know if I'm qualified. For this discussion tonight, it's a little above my pay grade. I mean, I'm not that deep a thinker, so I don't know if I'm worthy of this call.
You won't get beat up on this
he,
call.
He downplays his ability. And his what do you think? Well, first off, before we get into that 12%, well, you want to comment on the 12% before you want to talk about your personal experiences with Joe Biden, because I think that gives some really good perspective about who this.
I think I'd be more comfortable discussing that. I kind of came in on the point where I don't know which gentleman was saying that Biden said we got your back, and the 20 years of experience that I've had with him, you can believe it. Now, what has to happen is, and what normally happens in organizations, the head of the company can feel a certain way. And, if he doesn't pay attention, does it trickle down to the people on the ground? Therein lies the issue. Biden is telling you the truth. He knows what happened for him. He knows who helped him. The first indication was he picked a black female to run with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he didn't do that. He didn't do that to get the South Carolina vote. That was a decision he made after he ran the gamut of states. So he was already. He was already fine. He was already the candidate. So he didn't necessarily have to pick a black woman, but he did. He did. And that should be the first indication. And, the other thing with our folks are, and rightfully so, we expect a lot. We demand a lot. But, and I'm not saying we're anywhere close to where we need to be based on that choice. But, you know, damn, we got to say, well, okay, he took the first step. You know, acknowledge things that are positive. You know, don't dismiss it. I mean, that, so he picked the black woman and said, yeah, well, that ain't, you know, this ain't. I mean, you know, acknowledge that. You know how many, white folks are probably were ticked at him that he did that? But he did it. So I'm saying that, you know, the jury's still out. I'm defending him because I think he's a righteous person, probably the most righteous person that we will ever deal with in that position. And you know, I think it bodes well for black people in the future. Are we going to get everything we want to get? No, nobody does. But I think this guy's heart and understanding what he needs in order to win is in the right place.
I noticed something about him, and we were talking about this. As from being around this from childhood, we noticed a lot of stuff about politics and things. And one of the things that always struck me was when you meet someone running for office and they're coming out shaking hands to people, talking to people, getting people's votes, how do they interact with you? Do they look you in the eye and take you in, or are they just shaking your hand like and looking past you to the next person, just looking past you, not even really taking the person in? Because I believe that a public servant, it has to be just that, a public servant, a people person. And that when you talk to the people, you see the people. You talk to them, you listen to them. And if you look at any pictures of Joe Biden, he is seeing the people. He is engaging with the people. You can see how he looks at people and how he takes the time to talk to that. That's one thing that impressed me with him. And another thing that I think was downplayed during the election, I think people should have pointed out, this guy decided to be a lifeguard at a pool, an all-black pool, in probably the 1940s, right, or early 50s or whatever. And it was a time when how many white people you know would do that, to go be a lifeguard in a pool where all these black people are swimming in the same water that he, you know, I mean, we're talking about times when they would drain the whole pool if a black person got in the pool, right? They would tear places down that they felt were desecrated by the presence of black people. And this guy chose to be a lifeguard at a pool on an all-black pool. So that should tell you something about, to me, told me something about where he comes from.
Just for a little levity, either he's a real decent guy or he was hard up for a job.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Somebody was getting ready to chime in. One of you guys were getting ready to chime in.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, it's funny. I've heard the lifeguard story is Biden would tell it during the course of his campaign. And, you know, I'm first of all, I have utmost respect for him. Let me just begin with that. You know, when I had sided the business that, you know, much was expected of him, you're absolutely right. He's already shown the community his respect, Congressman. But the thing that I think about that whole lifeguard story, I thought at one point when I would hear it, that it just seemed a little bit off the beaten path. I mean, I knew, you know, that he meant well, but I, for some reason, felt that that was not necessarily serving in the interest of his candidacy. But I will say, in the 47 years he's been there, and I've covered, you know, your father, I've covered a number of people, I will have to say that I've never heard anything. I mean, there were, you know, stories about the touchy-feely and some other issues, but nothing on the basis of race that would have, you know, that would be a shock to a James Clyburn, your colleague, or anyone else in the, you know, in the committee there that in Congress that, you know, would be untoward Joe Biden. And I thought it was that we, you know, yes, there could have been a whole host of other Democrats who could have, you know, filled the spot, but it was his time. And I just feel that this is a defining moment for black folks because it shows our strength when we can come together, you know, it, with the exception of the 12% and the 39% of the Latinos who fell for the old okey-doke, as they say in the community. You know, it just saddens me that we still have that to deal with. And there's a lot of work to be done. But, you know, there was such a relief. The whole world rejoiced, in my opinion, in this man's defeat, you know? So I just
absolutely.
I just wish he would leave. You know, there's got to be a way for expulsion there.
Well, let me just say this. Come January 20th, those same guys that are protecting him are going to help him leave the White House. They'll protect him, but they know he has to leave the White House. And there's a term that I've come across now that the FBI uses for a person like Trump. So they already have a game plan in place. He's called a embargoed subject.
Yes.
Is it embargoed or is it?
What did I say, Eric? What was it?
Was it embattled?
No.
It wasn't embargoed.
As we talk,
it's a terminology based on. It's a terminology that the FBI uses.
No,
I heard
barricaded.
Barricaded. That's it.
Barricaded subject.
Yeah. That's right. That's it. That's the.
And they
the
have
terminology
a plan. They have a plan for people like that. So.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
It's in one of their books. They go to that page in their book or their Google search and they go barricaded individual. Okay, these are the steps you take with that person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely.
And
Congressman.
And they're already referring to him. In that manner.
Yeah. Congressman, serious question about rule of law and order. And congratulations on your landslide victory, by the way.
Right.
That just shows you your constituents know truth versus fabrication and what they, you know, the lies and obfuscation. However,
thank you.
Rule of law and the Constitution. It can Congress, since you control the purse strings, I'm looking for and I'm hoping that you and Pelosi and the leaders in the Congress bring into the well persons like Barr and Pompeo and publicly disgrace them and strip them of their positions. Because otherwise we're going to look at the notion of pardons coming, and I want to make sure that we establish the rule of law from the top down, not from the bottom up, and even the censure, public censure of their disgrace and their continuing to break rules that they swore that they would protect and serve the Constitution and the citizens of this United States. And ultimately, if we're going to reestablish the United States notion that we are about law and order, then we've got to straighten it out from the top down, not from the bottom up. It's all about the perception. It's like tearing down that statue. It's not the statue, it's the concept of the statue. And we need to publicly disgrace these people on television and the Congress.
Well, you know what? I think I might take you up on that offer. I'll check with my staff and see to the extent that I go to the well and I can, you know, we have opportunities to go to the well and speak on any topic we want for 1 minute. Yeah. And, you know, I promise you that, you know, checking with my staff to make sure that, you know, I'm not violating any rules of the House, I will do that.
Yes. It's the optics, you know, and I mean, black people in this country, for all that we've been asked to save the country, and God bless our African-American sisters, Stacey Abrams, she delivered. She delivered.
Yep.
And we should honor her in that manner because black women and black people saved this country again.
Absolutely. You know, my good friend Cedric Richmond, who was you know, very, very smart and got in Biden's ear before Biden even was talking about running and went to him and said, so let's go. And he's like, what do you mean? He said, no, you need to step out here, and has been a loyal advisor to Mr. Biden all through this campaign. Said the other day, you know, on a call I was, you know, it's like when he was growing up, you know, he used to watch Mighty Mouse, and you know, here comes Mighty Mouse. You know, they used to sing, here he comes to save the day. And he said,
yeah,
that's black people. We're Mighty Mouse. Once again, yeah, here we come to save this country from itself. And,
right.
And but I think, you know, I think too, and you can tell me if you feel the same way, there's more of an open discussion about it now than ever by not only our community, but the majority community as well. They're starting to even acknowledge it publicly that, you know, yeah, you know, wasn't for black women and black folks, you know, where would we be? So, you know, they've even had to acknowledge it because of the extent of what we've done to keep this country from falling in the hands of that terrorist again. And I guess I can say that I can do that when I go back to the floor, because I now that I'm thinking about it, I did go to the floor in the first year of the president's term and call him the first Manchurian president. So I guess if I say something about Barr, those other guys, it wouldn't be. I mean, if I could do it to the president, I guess I could do it to them.
Congressman,
yeah.
I also wanted to get your reading on this. The fact that this past year, not to say that everything began with George Floyd, but the confluence of racial events this year particularly, and the fact that the divider, you know, held sway in terms of promoting his agenda, I know that inspired many of us to come out, and it increased the temperature. But, the thing is that when we have candidacies like what happened 4 years ago, where do you think the Democrats went wrong when Hillary was, or Hillary was just not the person for that position? You know, I'm just throwing it out there.
For the life of me, and I still don't understand it, because I was totally in support of Secretary Clinton, because I knew of her and her work and how thoughtful she is as a policy person, that she really could have done great things for this country. And for some reason or another, people just did not like her. They did not like her. And, you know, it's a lot of things. The press somehow painted her in a certain way, and, you know, a lot of people just picked up on the press. They didn't even know they didn't like her, but the press said that you shouldn't like her, so people didn't like her.
Right.
There were a lot of people that didn't like her because of the hard work. And look, we're all friends on this call. She's no punk either.
No.
So, you know, that nice little face you used to see of her standing up there, listen, her husband didn't get where he was by there not being somebody taking names and taking numbers all those years. And guess what?
Right.
That was her.
Exactly.
That was her. So when she got, see, it's difficult for people in the political sphere to come to be the, you know, and I've had to kind of, you know, learn this, because I was my father's nuance guy. I was, you know, whatever he needed done, this needed to be done, that needed to be done. This, I was never out in front. I never went anywhere and spoke for him. But, you know, I got to a point where I felt I had something to give to the community, and I ran. But I had to learn a whole bunch of new things. I thought I knew stuff. You become a candidate, it's a whole new world.
It's a whole new world.
And so just think about the 30 years she spent behind the scenes now to step in front and be that person. And there were a lot of people that she, you know, cut along the way that took their vengeance out on her then. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You had 30 years
right.
of enemies and cutting people for your husband. Guess what?
Right.
They all come back to cut you. So
right.
And they spent 30 years demonizing her too, from when she tried to help out with the health insurance when Bill Clinton was in office, right?
Oh yeah, everybody tried,
right,
but
right.
Barack Obama's the one that passed it. Let me say this about her as well. And you know this for a fact, and some people, when I say it, they hadn't really thought about it. But it was mentioned. She would have been the most qualified person ever to run for president of the United States to hold that office.
Look,
she had already been in the White House as first lady. She had been secretary of state. She had been a United States senator. I mean, she was one of the lawyers on the Watergate Commission. She was one of Rodino's
right.
and the Democrat
wow.
lawyers on Watergate.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's amazing.
She'd have been the most qualified person ever hold that.
You know,
let me just give you one other little tidbit that kind of show you the president she would have been. So when Hurricane Maria came along, and you know, Trump was twiddling his thumbs and not doing anything. They just happened to be interviewing her on some other thing, and they asked her about Maria. She said, "Well, the first thing I would have done when I saw the hurricane was coming, I would have gotten the ship Hope and the other ship that are hospital ships that we have. I would have gotten them ready and positioned them off of Puerto Rico maybe a week or two before it hit. Bang. And what happens after that? Trump gets the ship Hope started, but it takes 2 or 3 weeks to put the thing together to even move anywhere. But she said she would have done that and had it off of Puerto Rico a week or two before it hit. And now it took another month for them to get it together and get it down there. So that's just
maybe
this country. That's what she would have been to this country. 2 weeks ahead of everybody.
Yeah.
What do you think about the president's refusal to recognize the president elect, him and the Trump and his supporters you know, Pompeo and many of the administration people not working with the transition. What do you think about their refusal to? Does it put us in jeopardy, like they're saying in the news?
He's a child, and they're scared of the child.
Mm-hmm. Particularly as coronavirus cases surge.
He's clearly 70 million people are following him. So, you know, all of those guys that want a future in politics, you know, if Trump says you're down, you're down. And guess what? Those people are going to follow him. So none of them really want to, you know, raise his ire or not gain his support. So they're just sucking up. They're sucking up to the boss.
Do you think
70 million people voted
yeah.
for this individual? What I'm really concerned about, as a historian, I look back at 1862, and I hear Calhoun on the floor of the Congress engaging in the same conversation that a Mississippi state legislator who called for the secession from the Union after Trump's loss. Now, he says ignorant as they come because he didn't say secession. He said succession. So he already is an idiot. Okay, but 70
right.
million people, and what I'm very concerned with as history repeating itself, because we're moving toward that line again as already a declaration of 70 million people who are following lockstep in the same manner for which the South
United Confederacy. And here's something that I think perhaps maybe it's time that Congress, now that we have and continue to have control of the purse strings, is to engage in a crimes commission. A crimes commission, because we are allowing persons, politicians, both federal, state, and local levels, to engage in conversations relative to a violation of their constitutional oath. And if we continue to let them do that, they are sowing the seeds of sedition and anarchy. And these people are armed. They are armed to the teeth. And it's high time that we stop the proliferation of the guns and access to weapons, because the defense contract, this is how Lindsey Graham and the rest of the southern states have been propping themselves up. They've been getting the defense contracts to do what? Make guns. And the gun manufacturing industry in those red states are the ones that's keeping this notion of white supremacy. Every time there's an incident, the sale of guns just blows out the ceiling. And we're not the ones buying the guns. And we need to have some opportunity to have an open conversation about the Second Amendment. And in addition to that, one more piece of suggested legislation, since you guys are going to have the power, is it time to have a constitutional amendment that makes them swear to uphold the Constitution and rebuke white supremacy and racism and bigotry? It needs to be a federal crime. If you get caught doing one of those things, you cannot serve the public of the United States of America.
Well, I don't know if you could get that through. I don't know if you get that through to Congress.
Of course not. You understand it's
sure.
Adopted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're talking about making examples
out of a few
individuals. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know who's building an addition to their house, but it's a lot of noise. You might want to mute maybe sometimes, but I think that we're going to have to take a look at that, and I think it's going to be an opportunity to do that with Vice President-elect Harris in that position and a lot of things going. You know, the other thing, you know, and I've been talking a lot about this over the last several days, you know, defunding the police became a problem for some of our colleagues that lost, being portrayed a socialist became a problem. And, you know, a lot of people were kind of blaming, you know, the Democrats for that message. And no one in the Democratic Party was using those terms about defund the police. You know, maybe, I don't know, the squad or a couple of them, but there was no real use of that terminology throughout the caucus, because a lot of the Black caucus members, we don't want to defund the police. We want to restructure it, and you know, and maybe use dollars in different ways. But shoot, man, we need police. I'm not looking for police. We need to organize them and have them conduct themselves in a manner that that you know every person, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is there for everyone. But I'm not talking. Shoot, I need a cop. I might need a cop to call a police when they break in my house or something or whatever. But I don't need the cop coming in my house and then throwing me to the ground and putting me in a chokehold.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean, there's a difference. There's a difference, and you know, I think we need to be a bit more, you know, selective on how we discuss those issues, because we lost a lot of people because the Republicans were able to say they don't want police, and you know, and they're anti, and they're for socialism. They want communists and socialists to come here and run this country. They're calling Biden a socialist. I mean,
which, if you just think about it, is crazy. Wayne, Wayne, you had, I think, Wayne, you had a question earlier that you wanted to get in there or a comment.
Yeah, and I, unfortunately, I've had a senior moment since then. But, you know, there's just so much, there's so much to discuss with regard to that. But one thing I wanted to find out, this speculation that Cedric Richmond may be considered for the cabinet, how would that impact on not just the Congressional Black Caucus, but if he should take a position, you know, what will that mean? Because the House suffered a couple of losses, regrettably, this past election.
Right. Well, you know what? It's an, it's interesting that you said that because from what I understand, the leadership on the House is a little sensitive to the number of members that could potentially go to the administration and how it would impact our majority, which is fragile right now. We're at, you only need 218 votes to beat a majority in the House. Right now we stand at 220.
Right.
So we only have two votes more than them. So, you know, you start picking members to go into the cabinet, then, you know, there, you know, a lot of these aren't where, you know, they go and elect, you know, some of them aren't appointed. So every governor is not going to appoint another Democrat to that seat.
Right.
You know, or even in some states where the seat is Democrat, the Republican governor could finally stick one of their people in there. Like say, just for instance, say Marsha Fudge goes to become Secretary of Agriculture, and there and you do have a Republican governor. Does he take a black Republican and stick him in the seat in Cleveland?
Right.
God forbid.
So the leadership is kind of talked to the Biden administration now about, you know, just please be careful about, you know, how many people you're taking, because we're, you know, it's not like we're up like 17, 18 seats and you take five people, you know, so.
It's a delicate game that has to be played, and it's walking the tightrope, especially since this is restructuring the government that has been severely hampered. So we really have. He's right, Congressman. You're right, and you just can't start cherry picking and reducing your power that you've got votes, and then realize that you're shooting yourself, trying to put in people who are definitely qualified.
Actually we're up to 221 now. I just remember I got news that the one of the people that we were most worried about finally won her election, Lauren Underwood in Illinois. And so she's coming back to us. We at noon, she didn't know what it was going to be. And so I heard at 2 o'clock they called it for her. So, you know, when we talked to her, she still was up in the air. She said it could take as long as to Tuesday to find out, her fate. But I hear they called it at 2 o'clock today. So we're at 221 now. So we think the calculation is we can probably get to 225.
Right.
So if everything breaks right for us, we'll be at 225. Which is only seven votes, you know, from there. If we're three or four votes from the leadership, you know, Republicans could play all kinds of games with people that are in, you know, not say seats, that, you know, that are in traditionally Republican seats and playing
right
with these folks. And they have to vote with the Republicans on something because of the people in their district. You know, it would be crazy. But if you have the majority large enough, it gives them shelter, gives them cover. So,
Georgia is one of those states that right now really can sit in the balance of power, and Ossoff and of course
Warnock,
Reverend Warnock, really have a chance to be the change factor, And January
5th,
which is the runoff, can really be established. And once again, the power broker that Stacey Abrams brought to the table, this is huge. This is where it comes down to those two replacing two senators from the state of Georgia, who Republicans, Isaacson resigned, and Collins was defeated by Kelly Loeffler in, 29% versus Warnock's 32%, 35% somewhere
right.
in there. But the struggle beyond just that, because she should have been censored for her, and she and her husband should have been censored publicly for their shenanigans with the stock market, as you well know. They did a rough shot on that, and nobody said a mumbling word. You know, so
right.
we got Mitch McConnell needs
too.
To be
yeah, well, we're gonna definitely have to use that during this campaign. And let me tell you, in terms of Georgia, I'm really concerned.
Yes.
I'm really concerned because that is a tough road to hoe.
Yep.
Not only to get one, but you want to try to get two. This is a tough yo. If we pull this off, I'm all in, and I'm going down. But brothers, let me tell you, if Mitch McConnell ends up being the president of the Senate again, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I can't imagine.
Really briefly, guys, we got like about 3 minutes, three and change left. The President Obama has his new book coming out, and I wanted to ask you about one of the quotes he made in the book, where he says, "It was as if my very presence in the White House had triggered a deep-seated panic," which is exactly what Donald Trump understood when he started peddling assertions that I had not been born in the United States. And my only reaction to that was, as if.
Well, it took you so long.
Triggered a deep-seated panic, and you right there had a front row seat, Don. So why don't you talk about that really briefly?
I'm like, really? You just figured that out, or you just didn't talk about it for the 8 years you were there?
Probably.
You know, he's a shrewd politician, and he did what he did to maintain the presidency. I always say that the first time could have been a fluke, but when you get reelected, look at Trump. Trump wasn't able to pull it off. It's no easy notion to be reelected, and to know that black man did enough to be reelected twice says a lot about him. But you know, it's interesting. His blackness is coming out in this book a bit. That he has really kept, to a minimum during his public life. But now, he's free and can say the things that he wants to say as a private citizen and, being well off now, he can say those things. But I just appreciate him for saying it because a lot of people, gave him a hard time about, the position that he had to take as president and it wasn't black enough and this and that. But, when I'm talking today to some folks about this and that, you can't tell everybody everything you know in politics.
There it is.
Mm.
I want to thank you for calling in. We got 1 minute to go. We're going to let you go, Congressman. Thanks for calling in again. Really appreciate getting your thoughts on it, all right?
Okay.
All right.
All the best.
Take care. All right, fellas, we're going to jump off. We're going to jump off. Why don't you, Byron, you want to give the folks your sign-off there, let the people know what's your last word really quick.
Yes, peace and love always, and thank you, my public and my friends, for using the power of your vote. We did it. Congratulations. Thank you.
There it is. We'll talk again to Brother Byron Saunders. Brother Wayne Gilman, you want to give the people words of advice and encouragement.
Well, I just want to parrot what Byron just said, but more importantly, I hope with this new Congress that they do something about social media, the Tucker Carlsons, and the Sean Hannitys of the world. We need to have them expunged.
There it is. Brother Wayne Gilman, we'll talk again. Those are the brothers. This is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Citizen Payne. We had a thorough discussion for y'all. And thanks for listening in. This is Kay's Son and Friends. We'll talk again. All right. I'm Citizen Payne, Eric Payne. That's Byron Saunders, Wayne Gilman, Congressman Donald Payne. Keep the faith.
Come on.